Welcome back to the CFSA podcast series. I'm Tim Murphy, Executive Director of CFSA, and your host today. Each episode, we bring you an interview with an individual who is on the leading edge of business and innovation in our industry. Today, we are honored to welcome Barbara Kemmes, Executive Director of CANA, the Cremation Association of North America. CANA just released their much sought-after annual statistics report for 2021, and we're excited to dig into those numbers with Barbara, but more specifically, what they mean for our industry as we move forward. Just a couple of things I wanted to share with everybody is, first of all, it's nice to have you back again. You were with us last month at the JW Marriott downtown Indianapolis at our conference, and you really helped make that that panel that we did more exciting and much more in-depth with your insights into things. So we really appreciate the fact that you were there to round that out. And another thing that I kind of noticed in my research is that CANA and CFSA both founded in 1913.
Yes, so,
exactly the same age. How about that?
Yeah, and thank you, Tim. It was really a pleasure to be with you in person in April. That was my first in-person meeting in over a year. And we borrowed, I won't say stole, borrowed a lot of ideas from your wonderful staff to apply to our own meeting coming up in August.
Well, you know, in our business, we call that R&D, which is rip off and duplicate.
Exactly. So thank you for being our R&D department.
Absolutely. Well, we've seen a lot of articles and heard a lot of talk about how busy cremation pros were this past year during COVID. When you spoke as part of the panel at our annual conference last month, you said that your numbers were showing that while the number of cremations may have gone up in 2020, the rate of cremations was actually holding steady at the same year-over-year increase we've seen the past 50 years. Did that end up bearing out in the final count?
It did. It did. And I had to eat my words. I'm not going to lie, because I did an interview last summer with a consumer newspaper and consumer-based newspaper, not trade publication. And the reporter said, hey, you know, this is out of control. What do you think? And I said, yeah, we're really feeling it. You know, and that's what I was hearing from my members about how they were feeling that their cremation rates had increased, and during the surges, so regionally, of course, they rolled around the country during the surges. That was true. Sometimes their individual or regional cremation rate did increase significantly, but of course, their numbers increased significantly. And so we were very anxious to do this analysis for the entire year of 2020 to see what it looked like across the country, kind of annualized and normalized across the country to see how the rate would bear out. And for a number of years, we've predicted a growth curve that the national cremation growth rate of cremation has ranged between 1% and 2% predictably for basically the last 45 years. And sure enough, it was 1.5% comparing 2019 to 2020. So
that's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you done any research into the motivations behind this slow but steady increase in cremation rates in North America?
We've done a lot of research over time, and we actually just published a blog post, which I can give you a link to for the show notes if you like, but where we summarized some of how things have changed over the last 5 years. So some of the research we did included actually talking to consumers who are alive and planning for their deaths and saying, indicating that they were going to choose cremation and then why. And this is the research that I think is most well known because it's been validated by a number of different sources. And the number one reason they give is what? Can you guess? It's price. They say, I'm choosing cremation because of price. But what they also mean when you dig into that a little bit is value. They're saying, I see value in this. And I think what a lot of us are starting to understand is that the person pre-planning and choosing cremation isn't necessarily thinking about what kind of celebration of their life or memorial service. They're just thinking, problem to solve. I don't want to leave decisions for my family. My family can figure out the service down the road. and assuming that they will, but not planning that for themselves. So this is a theme we've seen across multiple research points. We also did some really interesting research with Homesteaders Life, in 2019, in spring of 2019, that still bears out. These were focus groups with baby boomer women who had chosen cremation. And we learned a number of insights about why they chose cremation and what their experience really was with that, and would they choose it again, how satisfied they were with it. And the satisfaction was high. There were no regrets. The importance of price went down, and what they indicated is they were fulfilling the wish of their husband, parent, child to cremate. So in many cases, it was the first time they were choosing cremation, and they were pleasantly surprised with how personalized the experience was, with how they could really have everything they wanted. They could control the time frame. They could control. They could keep the cremated remains close to them. That was a really important selling point for them for cremation. And so there's I can go on and on, but I'll stop there. So those are just some indicators of how things have changed and why cremation is appealing to people now.
Yes, that is most interesting. And it makes a lot of sense, though, when you think about it. And I like the concept that you brought up about value. Because it's not always about price. It's about value and perception of value. So that's a very important point. As your data shows, the cremation rate in the United States has increased steadily by 1 to 2 percentage points year over year for decades. Is there anything in your data this year that surprised even you?
I really thought that this would be the year that steady growth would break. And I challenged our consultant to redo his analysis at least of 4 different ways to persuade me that this is really the case, because how could it be that a pandemic that impacted every aspect of our lives, shook up our economy, shook up everything else, wouldn't impact the adoption of cremation? And indeed, what we ultimately decided is that maybe that since the percentage didn't change in 1 year, we might see this impact over the coming years, because the answer is really in the numbers. There were several hundred thousand more people who experienced deaths in 2020 than had before. Those were premature deaths. Those were typically, not exclusively, but typically older and sicker people who probably would have died within the next 5 years based on their age and health status. But all of those deaths were concentrated in 2020 with gathering restrictions and other considerations that families never had to take into account before. So everybody had to figure out a new way to do this, even if burial was their tradition, but maybe they couldn't be graveside, or they couldn't have an open casket visitation, right? Or they could, but it was only 10 people and not the whole town. Or it was via Zoom or via technology. So everybody had to think about what they were doing in their plans in a different way. And so I guess, what surprised me is there was so much more direct disposition, yet such a desire for ceremony. And that happened later and is happening later. I hear from members how busy they are. It seemed like April 1st, a switch flipped and it was spring and the weather was nice and let's get out to the cemetery and place that stone or bury those cremated remains. I have to mention that the FEMA benefit we're hearing has helped families a lot who may have chosen cremation but not chosen memorialization at the same time. They took those cremated remains home, maybe just in a plastic box, and didn't purchase an urn at that point or a space at a cemetery. And with the FEMA death benefit program, they can elect to do something now and still get reimbursed for everything. So we're seeing, this is anecdotal, of course, it's not in the report, but we're seeing a promising trend toward people who may have had to make plans under adverse circumstances now thinking all the way through what kind of grief and memorial experience do I want to have.
Yes, that is a great point. Canada doesn't just analyze previous year's data. You also make predictions for future years, typically 5 years at a time. Mm-hmm. as you were pulling together your data from 2020 and looking forward to 2025, did you find any reason to believe that there will be a shift in the cremation rates growth pattern?
It's going to slow down. Yes. The answer is yes, and we predict that it's going to slow down. We, as you mentioned, Tim, we haven't really predicted more than 5 years out into the future, and decided to go to 2025 and 2030 in this report. And the reason we did that is because we have a huge demographic shift coming with baby boomers aging, and the peak of the baby boomer deaths. Demographers think, it's not just Kana, I think it's widely accepted, is going to be somewhere between 2035 and 2040. Now, with the pandemic, we don't know if that has shifted it earlier or what the next few years will let us know. We felt it was really important to publish these projections because our statistics are used for business planning to see which states are still in a rapid growth phase, which goes up to about 60%. Once the cremation rate hits 60%, we see that there's a deceleration phase. And the whole country, of course, at 56.1%, that's the magic number for 2020, is still in rapid growth phase. We expect that growth to be 1.5% or higher until we hit 60%, and then it'll start decelerating down to more of a 1% growth. We don't know when the plateau is going to be, when that slows permanently. We predict 80%. But in Canada, our neighbors to the north, which have a different, pattern of cremation rates, they've been well ahead of us for a number of years. The province of British Columbia is well above 80% and not slowing down. So that plateau could be north of 90%. And then when we hit that rate of whatever that plateau is, we experience the ever so technical statistical term of long tail as well into the future over the next, decades, 100 years, it slows to a very low rate, basically plateaus the whole time, because of course it'll never hit 100%.
Well, trying to play the prediction game is always dicey, as you know. But when you've got good numbers, you can do a pretty good job of looking out into the future with some accuracy. And so it's always kind of fascinating to do that. So our members, and of course your members, are thankful that you've done that and kind of taken that step to kind of say, hey, this is what we believe that the future looks like, and that's very beneficial to all of us. So we all appreciate that. We talked about this briefly at the panel conference in April, but something that can get lost in discussions about cremation is that just because a family chooses cremation as its final disposition of the body, that does not mean that it's done with no service or no gatherings and no merchandise. Does your research or less formally conversations with your members, do you look at services and merchandise that may accompany cremation as the form of final disposition?
That's a great question. We used to do what's called a disposition and merchandise survey, I think. It predates my time with Kana. I think the last one we did was in 2006. So we looked into repeating that survey multiple times. But what we have discovered over time, that back then we basically tracked product sales, right? Casket sales, urn sales. The idea was if someone purchases an urn, well, then they're obviously going to display that urn at their home or place it in the cemetery. There were a lot of assumptions in that research. But I am proud to announce that in early 2022, we are going to update the disposition survey. We're putting together a task force now of industry leaders who are fascinated by research, and perhaps have research departments themselves. So I would have an open invitation to your listeners if you want to know more about this, excuse me, and be involved with Kana to reach out to me, because we're looking to create some new methodology and answer questions like how many cremated remains are in people's homes? What do people do after cremation? Do they take them home, then place them in the cemetery, or leave them to their children to decide what exactly is happening? So this will involve actually interviewing or surveying customers. But that's the big picture and the questions we're trying to answer. And of course, I think we all know that when we answer a survey, it's a marketing opportunity. It's an opportunity to hopefully, without leading questions, but say, oh, you should be doing something with those cremated remains. Permanent placement is not in a closet or on a shelf in the garage. It is in a cemetery. It is in a columbarium. It is with some ceremony around that. So.
Yes. Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, our members, as well as I think the general funeral service community, will really be interested in what you find when you relaunch this. So we're looking forward to that. What is the key takeaway that you would say funeral suppliers like CFSA's members should find in your research results this year?
Yeah, I think our research results, because they're at the national and the state level, provide benchmarking. So it's really important to know numbers that are much more unique to a particular business. Of course, sales numbers, you know, tracking customer trends, that sort of thing are really key. But as you know, if you know that a state, because even though the national figure averaged out to 1.5% growth, some states grew faster than others. And so when you delve into the report, you can see that. So I think they serve as a benchmark to gauge, you know, things like market share, like regional trends. Where are you putting your resources? Who are you reaching out to? And as you know, at your convention, actually, I was talking to people who mentioned that the numbers are important to them at the state level, because there are some states where they really don't talk about cremation at all. They have diversified product offerings, but maybe they're not really talking about the urns or other things they offer. They're really talking about the caskets intended for visitations and display, not the cremation-friendly ones in states with low cremation rates. And what they've learned is, nope, they've got to talk about their whole product offering, because as cremation rates rise, they want to retain those customers and not have them assume that, oh, we don't have any cremation offerings for you. We're burial only or something. So I think that's one lesson to pass on to, to look at these numbers and see, okay, steady increase, even a pandemic didn't slow or accelerate the increase of cremation. So there's time to plan and every option, every time, even to your funeral home customers.
That's a very good point. So before we wrap up, it occurred to us that you're getting ready to celebrate your 10th anniversary as Kana's executive director.
Yes.
First of all, congratulations on that milestone.
Thank you.
Secondly, before that, you were working primarily with library systems and the associations that serve them. What made you jump over to a death care association?
Oh, it's such a great, I tell this funny story, and thank you for that question. So I'm a librarian. I have a master's degree in library science, and I loved libraries. And then my first job working as a reference librarian was in a library run by an association. And I was there for 7 years, ended up running the library at the last few years of my time there. Loved every aspect of it. And I thought, you know, I only move on when I get bored. And let me tell you, there's nothing boring about Kana. So I'm still learning 10 years in. So I was starting to get a little bored on jamming the copier and telling people where the bathroom is. And that's what librarians really do. But, and I thought, where do I want to go? Do I want to go fundraising? Do I want to go to libraries? Do I want to stay in associations? And I jumped to the American Theological Library Association, which and was their director of member services. I was there for quite a bit, learned a lot with a national association, realized I didn't miss unjamming the copiers. I really enjoyed association work and decided to stay on that path. And when I thought, oh, I want to be an executive director, a friend of mine pointed me to a job posting and said, this is hilarious. There is an association for everything. Look, Cremation Association. How amazing is that? And I thought, why not? I'll throw my hat in the ring. And 10 years later, here I am. So that's my story.
That's a great story. You know, in our profession of association management, we learned a long time ago that there is, in fact, an association for everything. And when you go to like an ASAE conference or something like that, and you see these very weird, you know, like, really, there's a group for that? But I mean, there's nothing weird about CANA or CFSA, because that's, you know, people can figure that out. But there's some organizations out there that you just kind of scratch your head and say, oh, my. You know?
It's so true. But there's some comfort in that, too, because, of course, associations bring people together with like interests and promote best practices and expertise. So if there's, you know, you can always look to these more eccentric or unique associations and say, okay, there's a group of experts who've got that covered. I don't have to worry about that.
Right. Yeah. So I hear you have a conference coming up in August.
Yes. We're so excited. And we're following in your footsteps, Tim. You and your staff did such a fantastic job doing an in-person convention in April. I was so pleased to be on the panel, but as you know, as your staff probably told you, I peppered them with questions the morning of that event. How did you plan this? And read the blog post that was so great. So and your staff so generously offered to meet with mine. So we're going to do that. So listeners, yes, associations talk to each other and we learn from each other. So our convention is coming up in Seattle, August 11th through the 13th. And if for those of you who attended the CFSA meeting, you're going to see some similar experiences at the CANA meeting, because yes, rip off and duplicate. Thank you. We are going to have a socially distanced space. We normally have about 70 exhibitors, but we're going to have about 30 this time because of the ballroom that we're in. But we've also implemented some ways for exhibitors and attendees to interact more frequently. So we tried to take every restriction and turn it into an opportunity. Isn't that what we do, right? So they said, okay, you can have exhibit tables, but no eating or drinking at the exhibit table. So no wandering around with your wine or your beer and talking to exhibitors. You have to sit and eat at one place. Okay, fine. So now we have exhibit tables, but we also have eating tables hosted by exhibitors. So there's going to be literature in the middle. We're going to have a host sitting at the table answering questions. And attendees will be invited to mingle among the tables to meet with as many exhibitors as possible. And then we're also doing rip off and duplicate. Thank you, Catholic Cemeteries of the West. We are borrowing from them this plan of having appointments with exhibitors at a designated time for more in-depth conversations with them. And we're playing a game through our convention app where you, with every exhibitor you visit, with every session you attend, you get points. And there's fabulous prizes donated by the association and by the exhibitors and sponsors. So the exhibitors decide who gets the most points. So if you're coming by just to scan the code, you're only going to get a few points. If you ask some questions and engage in a conversation, you'll get a few more. And I'm not saying, but if you buy something, I'm sure you'll get the most points, right? So
it really is subjective then.
Oh, the exhibitors are in control of this game, which I'm very excited about.
Good for them too. Good for the exhibitors. You know, that's one of the main reasons why we come together as a trade or professional organization is to learn product knowledge and service knowledge and learn from each other in those ways and make sales. So
that's exactly right. And we planned by design a smaller meeting this year, not assuming that some people wouldn't be ready to go. There's some people who are always on vacation that week or school is starting. You know, there's we all have lives, of course. So we're planning a smaller meeting by design, but we want it to be highly interactive and high quality. If we can't have the quantity, we're not packing them in, we're going to have high quality interaction throughout it.
That's excellent. Well, Barbara, thanks so much for joining us today. You know, for our listeners, you can find a more detailed look at CANA's research on their website, which is cremationassociation.org. We'll also link that for you on our own website, which is at cfsaa.org/podcast. You'll also find links to all of our podcast episodes right there.